This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here now is the June 14, 2012 Conversation on Detroit with Michigan State University President Luana Simon and Spartan alumnus and Detroit entrepreneur Dan Gilbert. The conversation was moderated by Detroit civic leader Sandra Pierce and took place at Gilbert's Madison Theater in Detroit. My MSU University Advancement colleague Pete Lasher sets the scene.
Dan, we are so appreciative of your support of MSU and for this extraordinary opportunity for fellow Spartans to learn more about your initiatives in Detroit. We have a wonderful program planned for you this evening, and we are delighted that Dan has agreed to be part of it. As the founder and chairman of Quicken Loans, he moved his company headquarters and its team to downtown Detroit in 2010, where they are helping to lead a revitalization of Detroit's urban core. In 2007, he launched BizDomU in Detroit to train, mentor, and finance business builders in their startup enterprises in the city. He is also the majority owner of the NBA's Cleveland Cavaliers, is an investor in numerous businesses, and received the Entrepreneur of the Year Award from Ernst & Young. Not surprisingly, Dan earned his bachelor's degree from MSU. And his law degree from Wayne State University. Joining him will be Dr. Luana Simon. As the 20th president of Michigan State, Dr. Simon has challenged the university, and in the process, the modern model of the land-grant university to redefine itself as the premier world-grant university. Her leadership has guided MSU through periods of unprecedented challenge and unprecedented growth. We are delighted to have another distinguished representative of the Detroit business community who will moderate the discussion with President Simon and Mr. Gilbert. As the president and CEO of Charter One Michigan, Sandy Pierce is responsible for building the bank's commercial banking business. A native of Detroit, she has also brought her leadership experience and local market insight to numerous civic and community initiatives, including recently being named as one of 9 members of the Detroit Financial Advisory Board. She is also vice chairman of Business Leaders for Michigan and the chair of the Parade Company. Although a graduate of Wayne State University, Sandy is a Spartan by marriage.
and in her heart.
Please welcome Sandy Pierce.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome Dan Gilbert and Luana Simon, who I've known both of you for a long time, and I appreciate being able to moderate this session. We're going to start with an easy question. And really, Dan, this is for you first. Comment on the progress you and others are experiencing in revitalizing the city of Detroit.
We all start with the premise that, and the reason that we moved our operations and businesses down to Detroit and all of our people, most of them are all on their way. If they're not here, they're on their way. We'll be here hopefully by the end of this calendar year. But it's taken the view that we're in a brain economy where wealth is created by brains in today's world, in a 2.0 economy, if you will, and that we're really not in a muscle manufacturing economy so much. Even in those businesses, it's brains that will create the wealth in the world. And the great brains in our universities are coming out of East Lansing and Michigan State first, of course, and then maybe the other one a little bit in Ann Arbor and some of the other ones, okay? And, you know, the sad part about it, for me, knowing people whose kids and, you know, friends of mine and others, who you hear about all the kids coming out of the universities, smartest, best, and brightest, leaving the Detroit area, Detroit itself or the Detroit area, and going to the perceived hot urban cores, such as Chicago, New York, Boston, and, you know, handful of others. And so when you talk to these people that age in their 20s and even into their 30s, they're not leaving the suburbs of Detroit or the city of Detroit, for that matter, to go to the suburbs of Chicago. It's not like they wake up one day and say, I'm going to go to Schaumburg because I'm really interested in Schaumburg, Illinois, you know. They all, to a person, they want the experience. The ones of the vast majority want to be in exciting technology, web businesses, internet services businesses. They want to be in an urban core. And so if we took that premise or that fact that they want to be there, for us it was not just because we're from Detroit, and me personally, I mean, my father was born in Detroit, my grandfather was born in Detroit, so, you know, been in Detroit for generations now. But if you, just besides the maybe altruistic view of that, you're in a position to impact positive change, it's also defensive in business-wise. If we're going to attract the best and brightest, they're not going to want to be this generation coming up does not want to be, you know, parking in a suburban location and walking 200 yards along asphalt in the middle of February and walking into an office building. It's just maybe that was part of my generation and the one before us, and you know, but it's not them. And they want to be in an urban core, and they want to impact the outcome. We have over 500 interns from 130 universities right here in downtown Detroit this summer at Quicken Loans offices, and they are a pumped up, charged up group, and Detroit sells itself. So, you know, just getting them down here is a big, big thing. And so we want to impact the outcome of Detroit, and we want to, at the same time, we call it doing well by doing good, and we don't think there's a conflict in that, and that's my short answer. I'll keep going forever, so, you
okay,
know.
Thanks, Dan. And then, Luana, you have the MSU Detroit Center on Woodward Avenue. You're now in your third year. Really shows your expanding commitment to the city of Detroit. So talk about the impact of that center for MSU.
People knew we were here. I mean, we've been working in Detroit for a very long time, almost since the founding of Michigan State, because Detroit was such an important part of the state of Michigan. But we were sort of in the neighborhoods just doing good, and no one noticed that we were there. So by putting the center there, we felt at a time when Detroit was near bottom, it signaled that Michigan State University was going to stay with Detroit, that for all of us in the state, it was important that Detroit be successful. And if you travel around the world and you say you're from Michigan, almost the first thing that people will say is, are you from Detroit? Unless they've graduated from Michigan State. So for all of us to be successful, Detroit has to be successful. And so we wanted to signal with the center that we were really here. And putting it on Woodward Avenue was the right place to do it. I was telling Dan, I may want to borrow some space from him because we're outgrowing the center. It has a lot of programs, community music, education, the list keeps growing. And at the same time, it is a hub for communities, including having, as you know, Sandy, some business leader groups, some change agent groups, feeling that it's safe to meet in the Detroit Center to have real conversations about the difficult issues.
Dan, all of you know, or many of you might know, that you're behind Wisdom Academy, a program that assists entrepreneurs in launching their businesses in Detroit and now in Cleveland as well. And Dan just showed me a few of the companies that are in this building that are really growing entrepreneurs. President Simon, Michigan State also provides a variety of educational opportunities and assistance to help entrepreneurs in this region. So maybe each of you could say a few words about the role of education in supporting unique needs of entrepreneurs in the city of Detroit. Role of education.
There's great evidence, if you look at the graduates of Michigan State University, including Dan, that pioneering spirit of trying to make a difference has manifested itself in not simply being a change agent in a big company, but also starting a lot of companies. So it's part of our DNA. And there's probably no greater entrepreneur than a farmer, if you just really think about what they have to do. What we've tried to do with a series of colleges, with now the College of Business taking an extraordinary lead with the entrepreneurship program, but adding this being communication arts and sciences, business, engineering, natural science, law, everybody needs to work together because our students need to think like entrepreneurs. And in our new neighborhood concept, we are, for our students with the six neighborhoods for the campus, we're going to overlay entrepreneurship as one of the themes that we think every student should experience. So if they go to a large company, they need to think like an entrepreneur to be successful. And they also need to start their own work. And we've got neat ideas emerging about the hatch and a whole range of other things. And it's great that we can do more because a third of our students are from Southeast Michigan. So if they can think about and be a part of this community, it gives them another entrepreneurial experience.
As I pointed to earlier, entrepreneurialism and startup businesses is and will be the key to bringing back Detroit bigger and better than it's ever been and the whole state of Michigan. I mean, there's just no question about it. And in today's world, as we all know, and I'm not telling you anything you don't know, you don't have to invest several hundred million dollars and have a five-year runway to build a manufacturing plant to create a very wealthy and high revenue producing business, because in the technology world the time frame is shrunk and the capital costs are shrunk significantly. So theoretically, very highly successful companies take a fraction of the capital that old manufacturing 1.0 economies used to take, and the time-wise. And so if the time is shortened and the capital is shortened, that's the great news, right? That's the great news that if you're going to have a city and a state that's been challenged, it's great to be in this area that's been challenged because you can come back bigger and better as long as you change sort of the culture and DNA that produces these kinds of entrepreneurs. So one of them you alluded to was BizDom that we started. It's actually a nonprofit academy that trains budding entrepreneurs for just 3 or 4 months, and then they present their business plan, and if it works or if we like it, they get $25,000 in 3 months in this building here of office space and supplies and all that. And the business fund owns a minority piece of the business. The entrepreneur owns majority. And the idea is as these businesses grow and create more jobs, the fund becomes bigger, and you can create and have more entrepreneurs be created out of that. So that and the other big part for us is Detroit Venture Partners, which is another Spartan, Magic Johnson. Mm-hmm. And myself and Josh Linkner and Brian Hermelin, two entrepreneurs from this area, started a venture fund that's also located in this building that has funded so far about 12 or 15 companies. Both BizDom and DVP, Detroit Venture Partners, have Detroit-based companies right here. One of them, Detroit Labs, which is in this building, and they did the Chevy Game Time mobile app that you saw maybe on the Super Bowl. They just got a big contract for Vault. That doesn't happen if you're in, the suburban location 25 miles away from General Motors headquarters. I mean, the fact that you're in this business community that's collaborative and, you create this entrepreneurial high-tech environment where companies are doing business with each other here and startups are starting, to me, that's where it all starts and ends with. So we're very, very bullish on that concept.
I think we need to all remember that this is not a zero-sum game. That we because of the Hatch and the things we're doing in East Lansing, can grow entrepreneurship and companies there, and we can grow companies here. It really is where the students and their ideas want to be. And that's one of the great strengths I think we have in our land-grant tradition is we were always a part of all of the state. It wasn't simply East Lansing. So the opportunity to connect with Dan and others in this community who are committed to this kind of work is an enormous opportunity for our students. And it's one we want to take advantage of.
Now, whether it's in East Lansing or whether it's in Detroit or whether it's in Ann Arbor, these companies, in my view, you can get a rogue one that's highly successful on its own. But I think it's rare. I think that wherever they cluster, in typically an urban-type environment, there's just going to be more opportunity, more collaboration between them. So my thing isn't, Detroit versus a suburb versus East Lansing. Just as long as wherever you're building that community, that's typically an urban core environment where they cluster and more opportunities and ideas come from.
And, really, I don't know if all of you know this, but we are out of housing in Midtown and in downtown Detroit. I mean, the developers cannot keep up with the demand of these young entrepreneurs and students that want to live here. So it's really, really very exciting.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. You're listening to the June 14, 2012 Conversation on Detroit with Michigan State University President Luana Simon and Spartans alumnus and Detroit entrepreneur Dan Gilbert. Detroit civic leader Sandra Pierce is moderating the event, which took place at Gilbert's Madison Theater in Detroit.
Okay, now Dan talked earlier about a brain economy instead of a muscle economy, and our systems, if you take a look at the foundational systems we have, we haven't quite caught up. It takes cooperation between the citizens, between government, between business and education to move forward. So talk about how your respective institutions help to lead in this transition, because it's not always easy, Dan, and you and I were talking about the M1 rail. It's not always easy to get all of that cooperation to make good change for the city.
I think you hit on a great point, Sandy. I think that this region has had its strife and its conflict. I mean, whether it's, race and white and black or suburban versus city or, union versus management or there's no way in this world it can work continuing on like that. And I think it's getting better. I really do. I think most people, wherever they're coming from, wherever their background, seem to understand that. We're not 110% there. But I think the bigger enemy, besides conflict, is the bureaucracy that's been built in various places, not only in political operations like cities and states, but universities, big companies, nonprofits, because they were built for an age that was, more homogenous. It had to be, less really innovation, but more cooperation from what the mission was and people executing a simpler mission. And today, you know, that bureaucracy that maybe served good in the past is to me the biggest thing that we have to get over and knock those walls down. Otherwise, we don't get ahead. So, you know, that's sort of my view.
And I think as Dan and I have talked, and as people who have such vision and passion like Dan try to connect with the university on a variety of topics, they do encounter universities as being pretty bureaucratic and having to go through a set of steps before we're sure that this might work. And so I think what it takes is really for us to have an organization that's more like our greatest faculty. And with our greatest faculty, they're eager to explore a frontier that's unknown. And they're eager to be out there talking about their work in that frontier because that's where they want to be. And if that paper doesn't quite meet everybody's expectations, they'll try again. And we as an organization need to adapt some of those things that are the elements of our best people. At the same time, we just need to find the right partnerships. And I think the land grant spirit positions us really well to do that. I think our departments and colleges, by and large, by most surveys, have relatively low barriers. We've got to be better at reducing the transaction costs of trying something new, which is getting a little bit high, and budget reductions tend to raise those. So we got to bring those back down. And we got to get more people out working with Dan and his companies and thinking about ways to do something differently. And I think we're poised to do that. And I'm really excited about where Michigan State sits in that spectrum right now.
There's a lot of existing talent that's underutilized, both in the city of Detroit and in the region. And if you think about the existing talent that might have the skill set, might not have the skill set that's aligned with where this world is going, what do we do about that? And how do we utilize that talent that so much want jobs?
We have over 500, it's a great question again. We have over 500 openings for technology positions right here in downtown Detroit. Full-time positions, average pay probably $85,000 or $90,000. And we can't fill them. We just simply can't fill them. So, you know, I think you raise a great point. Now, would we only take a college graduate for those positions? No way. I mean, if they're a technologist, if they know web design, web development, you know, any kind of database back-end stuff, whatever it might be in technology, and they're good, and we're going to hire them, right? We're going to hire them for sure. But the problem is that they're not here. Now, you have a lot of people that are unemployed, and so to me, the educational system, Michigan State and others, whether it's through a bachelor degree or others or some other way of transforming hardworking people who are willing to make it happen into some form of a technology person, that would be a huge, massive bridge for Detroit and the state of Michigan. So maybe Luann has 27 ideas on that, but I don't have the answer there, but I guess, you know.
I think part of our work with the Detroit Public Schools, however hard that is and has been, is really designed to give people bigger dreams. That's what land-grant universities always did. And what we want to do is, in addition to the internships, we want to connect more and more with our alums who are doing an enormous amount of work. If you take Dan, you take Tom Gores, you go through the list, our adopted people, Sandy, like you, who are really committed to Detroit, and we put them together, and we really begin to develop a sort of a magnet of ideas and hope. I think we can move some of these needles very, very positively. We also, as a university, are in a different sort of skill set, if you will, and we need to be able to put together courses and programs that are not degree-oriented, but are the augmentation to degrees that people can take relatively quickly to get some set of knowledge that now will make them better fit for the existing job market. And we're a little slow about being able to find the resources to do those kinds of very targeted certificate programs that are short and give people a really hope. I mean, the deans who are here are in three areas in terms of comm arts and sciences, business, and law, where some of those programs can emerge, and we just need to free up some time and energy to do that.
Dan talked about the number of positions he has available in technology just at his company. If you go on the State of Michigan website, there are 80,000 positions available in the State of Michigan just on their website that they know of where they're open positions and they're not being filled. I mean, I think that's a stunning number, right? So we've just got to figure it out.
Right, we also have to recognize that this comes out of the Federal Reserve discussion today about job and unemployment, that there's a little bit of tendency, I think, in this job market, which is why I think MSU graduates are doing really well, for people to post jobs and want a more perfect fit to that job than they might have when the demand cycle was more robust, because people are just still a little bit skittish. And that's why I think as we can get more of our students down here doing internships and real-life experiences, then we have a better chance of making that match.
If I can, I'd like to switch a little bit to the auto industry because that's such a big part of our state still. And Luana, this is really for you. Talk about MSU and its Research University Corridor, which you are a big part of, partnering with Wayne State and the University of Michigan in playing a role to support the return of the auto industry specifically.
Well, I will, if you all want to get more data, there's a report on the University Research Corridor website because we do one annually and this year was auto. There's not a part of the automobile we don't touch on a research program. From thinking about new intelligent vehicles to drivetrains to the program that one of our scientists is doing that would revolutionize the combustion engine. So we believe that it's going to, as Dan said, be brains. And if Detroit is going to, in this area, are going to keep preeminence in automobiles for a long, long time, we've got to be the R&D innovation center, not just the manufacturing center. And I think we have the capacity to do that, and we want to be a part of that as well.
And Dan, how about all of that, your company, your group of companies, as well as the companies that you're supporting, how can they assist in the resurgence of the auto industry?
Well, look, as I mentioned earlier, we have started to do business in some of our companies with the auto industry. And so I think there's certain technology suppliers that typically weren't here in Detroit. So as I said earlier, and it's a great example, it's just such a great example, that's why I like to use it often, is we started this company, Detroit Labs, which is a mobile app developer, less than a year ago right in here. And they become, you know, a major supplier, in essence, of General Motors or Chevy, ordering two high-profile applications that they are now using, one on the Super Bowl and one now to come out for their Chevy Volt. And it doesn't happen, right? If they were looking in Detroit, I don't know, a year or two ago, three, 5 years, it's just no chance. Yeah. So that business goes elsewhere. So, you know, having those technology suppliers, if you're not in the auto industry, be able to interact with them. And they're, you know what, they're great people you can interact with. People think, you know, big, scary auto companies. I mean, that Sergio dude, he's a nice guy, you know. He'll even move office space to Detroit if you bug him enough. So, and we got him to do that just a few weeks ago. So, you know, they're willing and they want to. They want to see Detroit do well. And I think, you know, holding everything else somewhat equal, they probably would prefer doing business with Detroit-based companies. So to me, that's how
we do it. And they need technology as well, I mean, right? So they need the innovation, and your groups can provide those kinds of applications. It's really great.
Yep.
Okay, Dan, alumnus of MSU, can you comment on how your time at MSU impacts both the person and the business person that you have become?
Michigan State people, and we talk about this in our orientation with new people every month that come into the company. They act and they do. That other university tends to like to be thinkers, you know, and they like to think through things, which is nice. But we get to, you know, Michigan State people get it done. They just act, right? Sometimes, you know, sometimes you need thinking too, of course. I'm not saying you don't. But I really believe it's in the DNA, like you said, going back to the land-grant, you know, days. I think that Michigan State people are just, you know, kind of get it done. You know, tell me what I need to do, let's go, or here's what we need to do, let's go, and they make it happen. And so to me, it's been a big part of my memory at Michigan State, people that take action, make it happen.
No, I think that that's what we want to be known for. The Morrill Act is going to be celebrated in Washington, and the genius of this was to not sacrifice the theoretical for the practical, and that people could do both, and we were an and world. It wasn't, and that and concept of research and teaching and outreach of being in Detroit and in East Lansing and in Grand Rapids and all these ands are what make people really special. Plus, I think, and Dan and I have talked about this, or you take a number of very high-profile Spartans, there is a sense of commitment and a sense of determination about getting things done. And it's not just a doer. It is a doer in spite of obstacles. And if you think about the work that the vision that Dan had, that others have who are Spartans in Detroit in this area, and you would have said, and you have people from the coast looking at that, they would say, no way. In the same way, when I talked to Mary Sue about, I'm going to do this ag stuff, and I want to deal with food and kids, and she said, no way, how are you going to do it? I said, I don't know yet. Okay? But we're going to get this done, because it's important that kids and this community have great food. And we can parlay that into being the world's food hub to solve urban food problems for 20 years, because there's going to be huge problems, and we can do that right here. Now, do I know how to do that? No. Any more than you knew exactly how to do some of your companies. But that Spartan spirit is what will make a difference. And I think we produce a number of graduates, a number of students who have that special spirit.
So here's a statistic that I got from Michigan State.
Must be
by
right
the
then.
Year 2050, 9 billion people are expected to be alive on this planet, and we have to feed them.
We do.
9 billion people. Yeah. Let's go back to skill set, because I'm interested in knowing your thoughts, both Dan and Luana. It is true that we're going to a technology-centric environment. That's our future. So what skill set do graduates need to be successful in that environment? And really, Dan, how is that different from the skill set that was needed when you or I graduated?
Well, I think just awareness of technology and a curiosity about it. I don't think that was needed in the early 80s or mid-80s. I don't want to date myself too bad. Mid-80s when I graduated from Michigan State. I think that, computers were just, they were there, of course, but it wasn't. I mean, today it's just complete and total domination almost of your waking hours, okay, and sometimes your sleeping hours. So, we look for kids coming out that are completely aware, completely curious. I mean, they should know the stuff before us older people know it. I mean, that's the way I view it. If I know more about Twitter and the social networks than the guy that we're looking to hire, and he's 22 years old, then we don't want to hire him, because you should know more than me. I mean, you should be connected up the wazoo. Know more about these things that are coming. Know more about the trends in the world and where it's moving, and it's moving so fast. And so curiosity, awareness, besides obviously the knowledge itself about technology. But if you don't have the knowledge itself, at least, man, you're immersed in it, you're curious about it, and you're aware of it.
That's a good answer.
You're good.
But I think that there is a creativity to technology that is at the essence of how you think about that app, or how you think about how people are going to use this technology. Because it's not just sitting there. I mean, people have to use it, and it has to be part of something else to be powerful. And all those skills that people think about in the old days as those soft skills, because this isn't about just programming or finding or designing the CPU. This is about how you take creativity, the connection to people, and understanding of the tool, the technology, and put them all together in new and different ways. And that's really a special part of education. And I think it's a special part of an MSU degree.
MSU long has seen the importance of being a global institution and has embraced the concept of moving from a land grant to a world grant institution. And certainly being connected globally is critical to our future in Detroit. How are you embracing this global marketplace while you remain committed to Michigan and to the city of Detroit?
Well, I think our role was always to bring the best of the world to Michigan and the best of Michigan to the world. And now we're doing it in this globally connected economic system, this globally connected communication system, but it was always there. And if you think about Michigan State, we were founded 7 years before the Morrill Act as the prototype for the land-grant university. We were there to define it, not to just be it or be designated. John Hanna sort of started us on an international path in the 1950s when it wasn't fashionable to be international. And we've been pioneering that work all along. So it just fits that we can do all of this in this new society.
Dan.
I think where our businesses really touch the international side is the people that are coming here from all over the world to work in it. So going back to the technology team that we have, even on the Rock Holdings Quicken Loan side, so we have about 500 technology people. We're looking for 500 more, and they represent 23 countries right now. We just counted them last week or something. So we have a person from 23 different countries working in there, obviously multiple ones from different countries. And so, you know, you know, a lot of people say, well, are they taking jobs that are, you know, that would have gone to other people? That no is the answer to that, because we're having a hard time, you know, finding it. But number two is, you know, they're creating wealth and adding wealth and becoming a consumer and getting paid and taking up a house or buying a house or living in an apartment and buying goods and services. So they add and help grow the economy. And so, you know, for us, it's, you know, find the best and brightest wherever they may be and bring them, you know, to right here in downtown Detroit.
I would add on the international, because we get a lot of questions about international students and taking the place of Michigan students. And the good news is that we have 32,000 applications and lots of people who want to come to Michigan State. The good news is our admission standards have increased, so we're no longer sort of the place that is your sort of backup place. We're a place of first choice.
So I wouldn't have gotten in this year.
You would have made it, because if you wanted to come to Michigan State, you would have been able to overcome whatever it was. But what I think is important is the universe, since this is going to be a global world, and they're going to encounter these folks from 23 countries in Dan's corporation, they need to encounter them at Michigan State. And they need to understand how to deal with them, where they come from, because if you're going to compete, you've got to understand who you're competing against. And that's a very important part of this international flavor of Michigan State and the undergraduate student body, though it's sometimes, because of ideological positions, not seen as being very the right thing for, quote, a land-grant university to do. But we have to educate students in that environment, because if they can't work well with them at Michigan State when they're growing up, they can't work well in Dan's company and what we need to move Michigan forward.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. You're listening to the June 14, 2012 Conversation on Detroit with Michigan State University President Luana Simon and Spartans alumnus and Detroit entrepreneur Dan Gilbert. Detroit civic leader Sandra Pierce is moderating the event, which took place at Gilbert's Madison Theater in Detroit.
President Simon, for you in higher education, Dan, you as a business leader, what do you see as the greatest challenge, and what do you see as the greatest opportunity before us in this city? Greatest challenge and greatest opportunity.
I think our greatest challenges are our attitude. Because if we don't believe all of this, that you don't see the assets and you don't believe that you can make them something really special, then we're going to lose the opportunity. And the opportunity is there are enormous amount of assets, and we are well positioned geographically, talent pool wise, and with great people around the city like Dan, who are prepared to make a difference.
So and the biggest challenges are twofold. I think the one I alluded to earlier, breaking down the bureaucracy of insanity that exists in institutions everywhere. I mean, I'll give you one example just that we were talking about for 2 hours today. So we bought a lot of these skyscrapers down in downtown Detroit because they were having the skyscraper sale over the last few years. So, you know, it was like three quarters off. So we went ahead and, you know, bought them. And now you get historic tax credits on some of them, right? So if you know, you're going to put a certain amount of dollars into the building. You get historic. Now, under the historic tax credit code, this is a federal code, they you know, are trying to incent you to do a lot of capital improvements in these buildings, right, through and maintain certain historic qualities of the building. So these buildings, some of them are 70 and 80 years old, beautiful skyscrapers, right? We were not allowed to remove ceiling tiles that were put in the 1960s, ceiling tiles, the internal ceiling tiles. We wanted to take them out and expose stuff, you know, the natural part of the building, and they were going to kill, and they did kill, actually, initially, and still we haven't gotten about $8 million of tax credits. Because, you know, in their view, we mess with the historic nature of the building, even though these you know, hanging ceiling tiles, you know, were there built in the 1960s. Now, there's a bureaucrat in Washington who had he never been born, the world would be further ahead, right? So, it's true, right? Assuming no one else took his place there. And the thing is, because it's not just making a wrong, it's actually what he's doing or she's doing is saying the exact intent of this code to preserve these buildings, I'm going to do the 180-degree opposite of what it was intended to do. So, and that's not unusual. It happens all the time. And to me, it's still ingrained, and it's in a lot of places. And it's such a shame because eventually you get through it, right? You just get through it. But the terrible waste of time, which is the most important asset of all, that you know many people have to spend on silly things that need to, decisions can be made very quickly, don't happen. And the second biggest one, the biggest challenge is we need to see capital come back in to investment. You don't see people anymore talking about investing. There's a lot of people who have a lot of money sitting on the sidelines and they're scared, right? But you know, redeploy this capital, invest it and believe and build some stuff, invest in some business. You see it in other parts of the country, but you know, despite what may be viewed as our success here, we still have not, there's not a lot of people raising their hands, you know, saying, you know, okay, I see it, it's happening. You know, how about I put in 20 million or 30 or 50 or whatever into this, this, and this. And hopefully that'll come, but you know, it's a little scary when you're in an environment that nobody, everybody's, it's like at the poker table, everybody's just going like this and looking and just trying to preserve their chips versus, you know, investing them. So that's my two biggest challenges, I think.
Biggest opportunity.
Yep. Oh, biggest opportunity? Well, I think it's in Detroit. I think that you know, it's unbelievable, the opportunity down here. And I wasn't kidding about the skyscraper sale. So, and as you mentioned earlier, we can't find places for people to live. So any residential real estate developer, I mean, there's just huge opportunities here. I mean, this thing is just starting. I mean, it's just starting. And there's going to be thousands and thousands of young people who want to live in lofts and apartments and things and retail. And it's just, so I just think the opportunity is immense. And, of course, in technology businesses along the way, there's tons of opportunity.
Thank you, Dan. Let's open it up to the audience.
I'm Tony Happ, class of 67 and 68, Michigan State. And I have a couple of questions for Dan Gilbert. First, I'd like to acknowledge, without you, I'm frightened of what the city would be like. So I applaud everything you're doing. Here are my questions. The city council and the mayor embracing your vision for where this city can go and will go and supporting and doing the things. I mean, it makes me cringe when I hear this bureaucratic, we can't tear this, we can't do this. And so I guess my question is, what can you share with us and want to? You may not want to, but in terms of them facilitating you carrying out the vision, which is so exciting for so many of us who are also native Detroiters. Thank you.
Well, I think that Dave Bing came into was drinking out of a water hose right from the second he walked into City Hall. And he had to repair not only the image of what had occurred in the previous administration that we all know about and all the huge damage that was done there, but also, you know, the fiscal issues that have been there for the 2.5 years that he's all, yeah, 2.5 years that he's been there and all the problems and trouble. So he hasn't been able to play much offense, unfortunately, because he's been so consumed on the defensive end. Now, I personally think that some of these major decisions that it looks like are finally going to happen if we can get rid of, I think we finally got rid of silly lawsuits and craziness like that, should have probably happened a lot earlier, and maybe that should have been pushed a lot earlier. But, you know, to his credit, I think he restored at least dignity and character integrity to City Hall. But now, just like the auto companies, right, everybody was leaving Chrysler for debt a few years ago, and General Motors not far behind. I think he just got to get through the painful period and deal with it and be done with it and stop screwing around with it. And so then everybody moves to another brighter day like the auto business is now, right? Mm-hmm. So it's going to happen, obviously. It's still happening a lot slower than we all think. But, you know, I believe that that in the next year or two, this stuff will, or hopefully the next year, it'll all be completely cleaned up. And just like we feel about Chrysler and GM, we'll be feeling about the city's finances in Detroit. I mean, everybody wished it would have happened a lot earlier, but it didn't. We're only here. That's all we've got. And, you know, hopefully we get on the right track.
One of the things that's happening at the Detroit Center is, if you think about the Midtown development, it was really driven by a very powerful personality who just wasn't going to quit. And there's now people like that in the Downtown Development Authority. There's folks in Jefferson Street. So around the city, in addition to Dan, there are these sort of people who are passionate about making things happen. And what we need to do better is network them together and have them talk together so that we can get more synergy so that some of these things don't happen again. and I think with the Downtown Business Partnership Authority, DBP, that they're really committed that if somebody thinks about leaving, they're going to nab them in a different way than it occurred before.
Okay, let's go to the back. Someone has a question right here. I thought I...
What I'm wondering, we've talked a lot about technology. Luana made the statement that our admission standards are getting tougher and tougher, and I think the president of every university in the state would say that. And one of the areas that I don't think we're giving much thought to, if any, is what about all those kids that don't meet those standards? We've got a whole bunch of people out there that, you know, maybe used to deliver coal or used to deliver milk or used to work in a shoe store, and they made enough money when I was a kid for their wife to stay home. They could have a small house, they could have a family. That can't happen today. And we have that whole group of people that are not going to be able to get a college education because, darn it, they're just not smart enough. Well, we as a society have to really think through making opportunities available to those people so that they can be contributing members of society.
Well, actually, I think that if you look at the community college system and the rest of the universities, that for almost any high school graduate, there is a place for them. But let me say that I've been using my bully pulpit unsuccessfully to argue for a change in high school education to include a different focus on vocational education. And I've been significantly unsuccessful in this, so I'll say it, because if you look at what it's going to take to have this city run, or for us to have power or a whole range of things to get new pipelines done, if we're going to get in the gas business, we have to have a set of folks who in our day, your day, my day, would have gone through things called vocational education programs. Their mathematics would have been much more practically oriented, but it's a higher level of mathematics than when that happened before. So it can't be dumbed down because those are all computers out there running things. But we've got to figure out a way to capture their imagination and focus their attention to see jobs that they don't see right now that are really necessary for the state. And I don't want to call it vocational education, but it has to be that piece. In addition, we're doing some science work through Extension here on applied science programs, and I'm trying to get Roy Roberts to agree to let a set of dropouts, instead of failing the course over the summer, to take my course instead, and they're doing hands-on science. And our success rate in that curriculum has been pretty good for getting kids turned around to get the level of science that they need for some of these, what I would call higher tech, but still what you would call in the old days blue-collar jobs. And so we've got to rethink this, but it's got to be something that people see as being proud of. And we've got to sort of invest that, and we just don't have the right rhythm yet. But maybe I'm not good enough at it, but it's one of my crusades.
This is good commentary and good questions. Thank you.
Well, my view is if you can sell shoes, if you're smart enough to sell shoes, then you're smart enough to learn a technology and become a technology person. There's just no doubt in my mind. So I think that we have to give folks like that who maybe these, what we would call traditional blue-collar or light white-collar job, whatever you call them, are not paying as much as they used to. We've got to give people like that the information and the hope and the path of how they would transform their own skills, because there's no doubt in my mind that they can. It's not, I hate to say rocket science, I shouldn't say that around a person running a university, but it's not rocket science, you know, to become a person who's in demand for technology. I mean, there are 19-year-olds, 18-year-olds who are coming out of high school that I can tell you could get today, you know, 10 job offers of six figures plus, never go to a day of college because they just know so much about technology that they've learned on their own themselves or talking to people or went through training or whatever it might be. So, you know, we've got to get that hope out there. We've got to, because I don't think it's their fault necessarily. They just may not have been exposed to it within their family, within their community. So we've got to communicate that, yes, it is possible for you to learn. You don't need a four-year degree. Yes, if you can get one, great, but you don't need it to do well in this world. You really don't.
I'm Joanne Murphy, and I'm a native Detroiter, and so are my forebears who were farmers here. I say that because I am so fond of the city and grew up in the 50s when it was so robust, as many here have done. I have heard a wonderful presentation tonight, and I like everything that you have said. But I don't understand. I hear technology. I hear, of course, auto industry, which I grew up with. Who are these businesses, given a perfect landscape, who would be coming, flying in to do wonderful businesses here?
Who would they be? You could snap your fingers and say...
Yes.
Well, first of all, I think it's a pipe dream and a fantasy for any city, Detroit or any city, that you're going to go steal major businesses and companies and move thousands of people from any city to another city. I don't care if you're moving from Detroit to Chicago or the other way or wherever. It really doesn't happen that way. Businesses grow. They may grow and open another office here. I mean, small businesses may come here, entrepreneurial companies. Let me give you I have a great example. Now I'm glad you asked that question. So I was walking on the beach in Mexico a year ago December. I bumped into these two guys. I took my family on a trip, right? And they seemed like nice guys. Hey, how you doing? How you good? Good. What do you do? Well, we're entrepreneurs. We started this company. Where'd you start it? We started it in Chicago. Really, really. Where are you from? I'm from Michigan. Where are you from in Michigan? Southfield. Really? Where in South? Meanwhile, I grew up two blocks from these guys, okay? They're about 7 or 8 years younger than me. So I said, well, why did you pick up yourself? We both went to Michigan, by the way, and then they went to law school at Michigan, but they were entrepreneurial. I go, why didn't you stay in Detroit? Well, at that time, downtown Detroit or Michigan, it wasn't sort of the entrepreneurial place, so we wanted to go to an urban core, so we went to Chicago, right? How many employees do you have now? Well, we're pushing on 10,000. When did you start your company? We started it 2.5 years ago. What's the name of your company? Groupon. Okay? Here's the deal. The deal is that we can't miss the next one. I mean, so I'm not worried about moving people. I'm worried about the next group of entrepreneurs in this technology, internet, web world are going to graduate this university, funded, by the way, by public money and all of us to a degree, and then move and start and create their business in another city. And isn't that a shame? That's the biggest shame of all. So that's the reason that drives us every single day, to create this culture and environment where they're going to want to stay and make it happen.
People want to come here. Is the, right,
and build their
saying.
Businesses here.
I visited a neighborhood in Chicago when I was there last week. Company, actually University of Michigan graduate, and they work closely with ComArts and Sciences in their company base. And he's bought and sold two companies, and they want to be in a funky Chicago neighborhood where their kids can bike and walk, and these kids are lined up in spaces that you and I would probably not work in. They're all long tables, there's noise, there's all this kind of stuff, and they want to go do neat things afterwards. Okay?
Yeah.
And if we can create that here in Detroit, all of us, even though it's not the restaurant you or I would go to. Okay? It's not our version of old Detroit. It's their version of new Detroit. If we can do that, then some of those companies are going to turn into something spectacular. But if they only turn into 20 people who are successful, we've been successful.
So if you go to the third floor in this building and the elevator door opens, you're going to see these long tables. Mm-hmm. And there are 15 different companies sitting at them together, all doing work on their company. It's really a cool thing to see. That's the future, right?
That's the future.
Thank you so much, Dan Gilbert and Luana Simon.
That was the June 14, 2012 Conversation on Detroit with Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans alumnus and Detroit entrepreneur Dan Gilbert here on MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Detroit civic leader Sandra Pierce moderated the event, which took place at Gilbert's Madison Building in Detroit. To hear the conversation again, please visit SpartanPodcast.com.
Higher radio, turn it up. you know, radio.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
Hi, it's Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. We've all heard the expression, it's all about who you know. And wherever you are on your career ladder, having a friend on the inside can make all the difference. When you join the MSU Alumni Association family, you're instantly connected to 500,000 Spartans around the world, many of whom are key decision makers in just about every major enterprise. Whether you're looking for a way in or a way up, your MSU Alumni Association affiliation can help you link up with that MSU alum who'll always take your call just because you're a Spartan. Building your network right now before you need it is the best possible career insurance, and joining the MSU Alumni Association is the best possible way to get the most out of your Spartan life. Learn more online at alumni.msu.edu. That's alumni.msu.edu. The MSU Alumni Association, your personal network for life.
The Michigan State University Department of Radiology is a leader in MRI, imaging research, and patient care. From world-class research to state-of-the-art patient care, we're providing outstanding diagnostic imaging technology. We're also a leader in sports medicine, delivering quality care to athletes and sports participants of all ages. Visit us online at rad.msu.edu and see how we are boldly designing the future.
Our mission is to be your personal network for life.
Scott Westerman leads the Michigan State University Alumni Association.
The best reason to become a certified Spartan by joining the MSU Alumni Association is the network of 500,000 Spartans that are out there that we can connect you with.
Join the Michigan State University Alumni Association online at alumni.msu.edu.
Victory for MSU!
Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Please visit us online at SpartanPodcast.com and join us every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock for MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.